On today's episode of Locked On Nets, your host, your boy Josh Bass, is going to go solo talking about the Nets' victory over LeBron James, a clean sweep over the Lakers this season, talking about D'Angelo Russell's revenge, JaVale McGee going insane, and Joe Harris's big performance, and also my thoughts on the Nets' epic win against the Kings coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
What is going on, everyone? Locked On Nets. I am your host, Josh Bass. Going solo today. Marcus, him and I have not been able to sync up our schedules over the last week or so. He was traveling, I was traveling. So we've been doing, continuing our streak of solo pods, but hope to. I think the Nets are playing Portland on Monday, and after that, we'll be back to our normal schedule, and you'll be hearing the banter that you know and love between the two of us. But go ahead and follow Marcus on Twitter at Marcus Barahal. Tell him you miss him. Tell him to get back from his weekend excursion in Florida, and that you want him talking about Nets basketball. The Nets had a big win last night against the Los Angeles Lakers. They went on the road and beat them 111-106. It was touch and go for a while. JaVale McGee became Wilt Chamberlain reincarnated with 33 points, 20 rebounds, and 6 blocks, but the Nets got it done behind a very good game from D'Angelo Russell. Joe Harris with 26 points. He was kind of the star in that one, and then Spencer Dinwiddie and Ed Davis making some plays in the second half as well that gave the Nets that win. And, you know, margins are tight right now. The Nets are sitting at 38-36. They're 2 games ahead of the Miami Heat right now, who are 35-37. The Heat got killed by Milwaukee. The Nets are 2.5 up on Orlando. Orlando's been on fire. They've won 4 in a row right now. Definitely have looked good. Terrence Ross had a huge game last night. I mean, they're not beating good teams. They're beating the Cavs, Hawks, Pelicans, Grizzlies, but you play who's on your schedule. For the Nets, it will be key. The Magic are playing. There's 2 big games. One is the Wizards play the Heat tonight. Really need the Wizards to pull that one out. And then there's a big game on Monday coming up, or Tuesday, sorry, where it's what's Orlando and Miami. Kind of depending on how Miami does tonight, we might even want Orlando to win that game on Tuesday. But Orlando's schedule is going to get a bit harder. They're playing Philly, then Miami, Detroit, Indiana, Toronto is their next stretch of 5 games before playing the hapless Knicks and then Atlanta back-to-back. So that's a bit easier. But we'll see what happens. You know, I think the Nets right now, 38-36, if they were to go 3-5 in their next 8 games, and hopefully kind of by their time they're playing Milwaukee and Toronto, Milwaukee's already going to have locked up the 1 seed ideally. Toronto is going to lock up the 2 seed. So those teams have nothing to play for, and maybe they say, "Hey, listen, we'll give the Nets a break and we'll rest our guys tonight." So hopefully the Nets, if they can go 3-5 and finish the season 41-41, obviously it would be just a massive accomplishment for them. But I think they would be pretty safe at getting into the playoffs because the Magic would have to go 6-3, which is it's not unattainable for them. But I think that with their schedule coming up in these next 5 tougher games for Orlando, they will struggle to get that done. And I could see them going 5-4 or so. But before we get into the breakdown of the Lakers game, want to kind of just talk about this insane win that happened against Sacramento, where the Nets outscored them 45-18 in the fourth quarter and got the crazy win. And 2 guys I think a lot of people are talking about, one D'Angelo Russell, with 44-point performance, 27 in the fourth quarter. It's just so cool what he's been able to accomplish this year. You know, he was a guy that I was trashing a lot, and he was kind of just left for dead, you know? He had 2 seasons with the Magic, with the Lakers. The whole Magic thing happened. The whole Nick Young thing happened. And he just got exiled to Brooklyn for what became Kyle Kuzma, but at the time was just another late first-round pick. And Brook Lopez, and he was used as kind of a way to get rid of Timofey Mozgov's salary. It's definitely a far cry from the lofty draft status he had coming out of Ohio State, but just the season he's put together and the improvement he's made, I mean, it's no one could have expected this in their right mind because D'Angelo Russell sucked last year on the Nets. He was really bad, I thought he was still slow, inconsistent. He shot 32% on threes. I know he was in and out of the lineup. He showed some flashes early on in the season, but for the most part, he was super inconsistent, had the same problems he had with the Lakers. And this year, just his ability to catch fire, his off-the-dribble three-point shot, getting to the basket at a better clip, just cutting down on silly turnovers and making those high-level reads that we all know he has the vision for, it's been just such a monumental improvement. And I can't remember, I guess a guy like Victor Oladipo is the same way in terms of just making a massive improvement in their fourth or fifth season. But even Oladipo, you know, he always had the physical tools. He developed the skills. Russell, you know, he still doesn't have the physical tools. It was just kind of a glow up on his skill development, and his dribble package and his passes and his mid-range game, which has become automatic. And I think it's so cool that the great moments he's been able to have, including getting a win to knock his old team out, the Lakers, of the playoff race this year. So kudos to him, and definitely really excited to have him back on the Nets for years to come, and obviously at the right price. But, you know, it's the season he's had, culminating with that All-Star appearance and hopefully a playoff berth for the Nets. It's been just a great journey to watch. And then a guy that I've been trashing a lot recently, Rondae Hollis Jefferson, who, you know, listen, I think Rondae is a very flawed player. I like the guy. I think he's very good for morale, seems like a great teammate, a fun guy, but he just doesn't fit the modern NBA at all. With his complete lack of ability to hit threes or even have a mid-range shot, he's an okay defender, but nothing special, undersized a little bit, and, you know, struggles to finish at the basket, just so out of control with his handle and getting off balance. But the performance he had against Sacramento, playing 17 minutes, giving the Nets that spark they needed, and hitting that crazy game-winning basket at the end in his ridiculous-looking ninja headband, I'm so happy for him. He was a plus 26 in 17 minutes, and you know he didn't get any time against the Lakers, and I think that's fine because when you look at it, he's not one of the Nets' best forwards. He's worse than Damari Carroll. He's worse than Rodion Skurets, and I think he's still worse than Jared Dudley just based on that the things that Rondae Hollis Jefferson's good at aren't important attributes in today's day and age, but him getting that capping off that great comeback against Sacramento and giving him a signature moment for the season, it was definitely really good to watch, and excited for Rondae. I think that you know, he's never going to be kind of a consistent rotation player in my opinion anymore, but I'm very happy that he had that excellent moment with the Nets, and who knows, maybe they will retain him and he'll make some improvements around the margins to make his game a bit more adaptable for the modern NBA. But we'll take a quick break here, and then coming up, we'll talk about that Lakers win, break it down, and what to look forward to against the Portland Trailblazers coming up. Welcome back to the podcast, segment two here. Let's get into this Lakers game. It was kind of a weird game because the first half started out really slow. Besides Joe Harris, none of the Nets could hit a shot. Dinwiddie was struggling. Damari Carroll was, I think, 0-for-7 in the first half. LeVert struggled. He was actually held scoreless for the game, 0-for-6 from the field. And it wasn't just his three-point shot that was off. It was also his layups. I mean, he has great footwork on his layups, and he'll be able to spin his way into an open shot, and then he was just not even coming close, completely bricking them. But, you know, the Nets did enough here just to get the job done. Joe Harris was spectacular. 26 points, 6-of-8 from three. Missed a lot of layups in the first half. I think he might have gotten intimidated by JaVale McGee's presence on a few occasions, but he hit a couple big layups late, which gave the Nets the lead. And, you know, when the Nets are up 107-99 with 2:48 left, I'm saying, okay, we're good to go. We got this win. But, you know, the Nets, the shot selection late wasn't great. Spencer Dinwiddie had a couple forces. D'Angelo Russell had one really bad force, and then that came right after he was inbounding the ball and just threw it away completely, which led to two free throws for LeBron. But the big play in this game, the Nets are up by three with, what was it, about 30 seconds left or so. LeBron has the ball, just goes out of bounds, driving on the baseline, and just slips and falls, and that's really the game from there, because Spencer Dinwiddie hit enough, even though he was only 2-of-4 from the free throw line late, just got it done, and the Nets really just needed one of those free throws to go down, which it did. But yeah, I mean, this is a good win for the Nets. The Lakers are not good. They have some talent, but they don't look like they're trying anymore. LeBron was probably the worst I've ever seen him play in a while. just could not hit anything. 8 of 25 from the field. Think about how efficient LeBron James is. When do you see him going 8 of 25? 8 turnovers, just seemed completely disengaged. Really, besides JaVale McGee and Alex Caruso, who was getting burned even though he was trying hard, everyone on the Lakers just seemed so disinterested. Rondo didn't do much. Reggie Bullock. Kuzma was just jacking up shots, 5 of 19 from the field. JaVale McGee was the only one keeping the Lakers in the game, and he was dominant. I mean, he had a career high in 33 points. He was, both Ed Davis and Jared Allen couldn't stop him. He was just getting the ball 8 to 10 feet, driving right into them, knocking them back and laying it home, getting offensive rebounds. He had 12 of those, just destroying everything inside, flying in on the pick and roll to jam over people. It's concerning that a guy like JaVale McGee is scoring 33 points, and I think it's a testament that Jared Allen has to get a lot stronger, and Ed Davis is a fantastic backup center, but really, he's not equipped to go against these really long athletic guys, because Ed Davis is a decent athlete, but he's very fluid, but he's not the most explosive, and when you look at him, he looks like a shrimp compared to JaVale McGee. He's only 6'10 at most, and so the Nets really need, this offseason, it would be interesting if they went after a guy who had a bit more bulk to him as a third center, kind of like a Boban type. Obviously, not necessarily, you can't find a replica for Boban because he's a freak, but someone in that mold, kind of like an old school Jason Collins guy that they used to have, a center that can really has the strength and size to at least slow down some of these guys that the Nets are playing that are just dominating them. Because Jared Allen finished the night with, what'd he have? He had 13 points and 11 rebounds, but it was one of the worst 13-11 games you'll see, because he just got dominated by JaVale McGee. And I love that. I think it was RJ who was saying on the broadcast, like, oh, JaVale McGee, like, people make fun of him, but you have to forget kind of that stuff and think about him as a two-time champion. And we know he can have nights like this. It's like, do we know that JaVale McGee can have a night where he scores 33 points on 15 of 20 from the field and blocks 6 shots and completely dominates the game on both ends? So that was a bit ridiculous. And RJ is really, he's living his best life. He's having a lot of fun on these broadcasts. But it was great to see the Nets get a win when they're not playing their best. Obviously, Dinwiddie really struggled from the field, did get to the line 12 times. D'Lo had a good game, was a little bit sloppy with his turnovers, but 21 points and 13 assists. I thought he made some really nice reads, and he could have even had more assists if Joe Harris was able to finish a couple layups, and there were some other guys. Damari Carroll missed a lot of open threes in the first half. But the Nets, you know, they did enough to win. It's just crazy to see LeBron's team just be so ineffective. And it really just gives you pause as to what the Lakers were thinking this whole offseason in terms of building the team they did around him, because this is just not meant to be. But Nets had a good game, and I think it's an encouraging sign for them, especially after that Kings huge win. They didn't come out extremely flat. They didn't come out hot either, but they were in the game the whole way and did enough late to pull away. There were times in the third quarter that it was just kind of run and gun. It was, Nets were draining threes back to back. Rondo gave the Lakers a nice little spurt at the end, but it was a good win for the Nets, and it's good practice for them going up against a guy like LeBron, just because from a physicality standpoint, he is very similar to Kawhi and Giannis, and those are two guys that if the Nets make the playoffs, they'll have to face either one of them, because I don't see them at this point being able to surpass Detroit for the sixth seed, given the schedule they have left. And man, let's also give a shout out to Damari Carroll, because he is a guy that I feel like is so underappreciated, but when you look at it, he's had a really good season for the Nets this year. He's averaging his points and rebounds, everything don't look anything special. He's averaging 11 points, 5 rebounds. When you look at his stats compared to last year, he shot 41% from the field last year, 37% from three, down to 39% from the field and 35% from three, respectively. But he's really just the Nets' most consistent wing. And he obviously, remember, he got off to such a bad start to the season. People were saying, oh, Damari Carroll's cooked. He can't hit anything. He shot 29% from the field, from the three in the month of December, and just was looking pretty abysmal. And, you know, the Nets were getting by at the time because Dudley was playing a lot and he was playing decently well. But when you look at Damari, he's been so clutch for them. In March alone, he's shooting 44% from the field and 39% from three on 5.5 three-point attempts a game. And that's so valuable because right now, Rhodey Kurucs is inconsistent from three. RHJ can't hit threes. Dudley is playing very sparingly. So Damari's their most consistent wing shooting threes. And he's also their second best three-point shooter if you just looked at that percentage from March, because Joe Harris is at 47% from the season. And then you have Dinwiddie and D'Lo at about 37 each. But Damari, I mean, 39% is nothing to scoff at. He's taking difficult attempts. We know how good he is at getting fouled. And those extra point or two a game can make such a difference. You know, look at the game against the Lakers last night where he had, he went caroling, as they say. He got that foul call. It might have been a little bit questionable. But being able to go to him when there's nothing going on offense, you have 4 or 5 seconds left on the shot clock, and being able to draw a foul that's going to give you an expected value of a point and a half at the free throw line, that's pretty freaking valuable. And it's just such a great pickup that Sean Marks made. I mean, being able to get a first round and second round pick, which regardless that they became Rhodey Kurucs and Jean and Musa respectively, getting Damari just in draft assets alone, just for Justin Holiday, was probably one of the pinnacles of the Marks regime, along with finding guys like Dinwiddie and Joe Harris and then making that trade for D'Angelo Russell. So wanted to give a shout out to Damari, as he's a pretty underappreciated guy around these parts, but think he's been a big part of the Nets' success this season. We'll take our final break of the pod, and then coming back, we'll do a quick preview of the Blazers games and what to watch Tuesday night against Portland. Last segment here on Locked On Nets, and just wanted to talk a little bit about what to expect from the Blazers game before we wrap up. First of all, the Blazers are going to be trying, because right now they're the 4 seed at 44-27. You know, in the West, it's kind of like a cat and mouse type thing, because no one wants to be matched up with Golden State in the second round. They much rather prefer a matchup with the unproven Denver Nuggets, if Denver could even get past the first round. But right now, because they are tied, you don't know if you want the 4 or 5 seed or the 3-6 matchup. So Portland's going to be trying to win and at least secure home court advantage in the first round. They have teams like Oklahoma City, Utah, Clippers, who else is there? San Antonio even, all on their tail. I think within 3 games, all of those teams are. So they're going to be trying to win and at least get home court advantage, because we know that obviously the Blazers are a lot better at home. They're 27-9 at home, and then 17-18 on the road. And the Nets, I feel like they always have trouble with the Blazers recently since the Damian Lillard era began. And going into Portland, where they have such a home court advantage, is going to be tough to win this one. The Nets played them last month and lost 113-99. This was one of the games where Spencer Dinwiddie was out because of that thumb injury. He was still recovering. The Nets shot 7 of 36 from 3, if you can believe that. They just couldn't hit anything. Alan Crabb was one of the few bright spots there. But the Nets aren't going to win a game shooting 7 of 36 from 3. They need a lot better output on, I said Tuesday before, it's actually Monday. I'm an idiot. They need guys like Damari Carroll, Joe Harris. Hopefully Crabb can return and he can start shooting. Dinwiddie, D'Lo, they need those guys to catch fire from three, because they're not a good matchup with Portland, because the Nets struggle to contain guards. So CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, that's going to be tough for them. You put LeVert on one of them for most of the time, but if LeVert's going to be a liability on offense, you're going to suffer still. So Dinwiddie, who I think actually did a really good job on LeBron James, he held up in a couple of different possessions, and he's doing this thing now where when a guy's driving to the basket, Dinwiddie kind of deeks away from him, so backs off, and then tries to just grab the ball and force a jump ball. And he's been pretty successful. He's done it, I think, one time each in the last couple games. So nice job there. I think his defensive intensity could be a thing to watch against Lillard or McCollum, but obviously D'Lo is not the best defender. And then inside, Nurkic is going to be a tough guy to stop. He's having a good season. He scored 27 points the last game against the Nets, 10 of 15 shooting. Jared Allen had a really hard time handling him, and he's another guy that's one of these bruising centers with good touch around the basket. So they really need to be able to contain Nurkic, and if they do and they can stop the the Blazers' two guards from scoring more than like 50 points combined. I think they could be in for a good showing. I think D'Lo is going to look to bounce back from that previous poor game he had against Portland where he was 4 of 16. And you know, the Blazers' guards aren't particularly good on defense. So he should be able to have his way. And this is a game where when D'Lo's having a bad game or when Spencer Dinwiddie's having a bad game, it's so important that the other one's there. So because Dinwiddie wasn't there in that last effort against Portland, if D'Lo's having a bad game, there's just no shot the Nets are going to win it. And also, Napier was 2 of 11, so they didn't really have a chance there. And it's going to be a lot tougher playing in Portland, but we'll see what happens, and maybe the Nets can surprise us. And I think that getting these two wins against Sacramento and the Lakers, if they get this one against Portland, that will just be gravy before they head back east. But that's going to be it for Locked On Nets. I know shorter pod today. I'm saving it all for when Marcus returns, all the banter. But please, in the meantime, follow him on Twitter, as I mentioned, at Marcus Barahal. I'm at JMBass_. The podcast account is Locked On Nets. Rate the podcast, review, subscribe, and then also next time we'll be announcing a very cool partnership that Locked On Podcast Network has recently announced, and it will be very exciting for the network as a whole, and awesome job to our boy, David Locke, continuing to do big things with the Locked On Podcast Network, and we're very honored and humbled to be a part of it. And we'll speak to you guys again soon, probably Monday night or Tuesday morning, and hopefully we have some good news to talk about with the game against Portland.